The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show. Never a solicitation. Dan, welcome to the big show. Memorial Day weekend version. I hope you have big plans. The weather may not be as good as what we hoped for, but we'll see. It is Indiana. It may change, but it sounds like it's going to be hot, humid, and rainy on Friday and Saturday and Sunday. It looks like it's going to be okay to get the racing up in Indianapolis. And then, of course, Monday is Memorial Day. And we're going to have a lot of fun at our house, some graduation parties to attend. I was talking about this with someone, that I'm at the age and stage of life where we're now doing a bunch of graduation parties, high school graduations, and then it will be college graduations, and then it will be weddings. And I'm going to later on in the show talk about giving money and gifts to all of these people that I have invitations from. So what do you give? What level do you put them on? I've been asking people all week long what they do and what they did do when it came to giving gifts. So we'll get to that in just a little while. Hot Rod's going to call in as well. The Fed is angling towards raising rates again in June, so we'll get his thoughts on that. But before we get to the big show and the content of the show, let's do a little news of the week. Brought to you by the Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame. Their banquet is coming up soon, supported by us at Comprehensive Financial. If you want to learn more, go to Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame's website at mcshof.com. We've seen huge profits so far. The operating earnings of companies per share in the S&P 500, the source comes from the S&P. In the first quarter of 2018, they're up 26.4% on a year-over-year basis. That's the largest year-over-year increase in earnings since the fourth quarter of 2010. Over the past 20 years, inflation in the United States has increased 54.2%. That's 2.2% annually. An individual living on a fixed income who's not had any benefits of cost of living increases would only have 65% of the purchasing power that they had 20 years ago. That's a big risk in retirement, folks. Remember, with a 4% inflation rate, you have to double your income every 18 years just to buy the same goods and services that you buy today. And I'm not saying you're going to have 4% inflation. It's just the reverse rule of 72. If you take 72 and divide the inflation rate into it, then that tells you how long it will be before you're going to need to double your income to buy the same stuff. All right, lots of borrowing going on. Eric Geisler talked about this on the show a couple weeks ago. His big concern is the student debt load that's out there. And student debt has increased substantially over the last 10 years from $580 billion to over $1.4 trillion. That's more than auto loans outstanding of $1.23 trillion. That's crazy. There's a lot of outstanding student loans. Just about everyone that comes out is shackled with some of this stuff. So if you're not, you should feel very, very fortunate. That comes from the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. How about just another billion days? This is what we've been talking about, folks, that right now, 76 cents of every dollar that comes into our coffers in the United States goes to pay for four things: Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and the interest on our debt. In 2007, we had $1.6 billion a day, billion, go out in Social Security benefits. In 2017, we're up to $2.6 billion, over a billion more, about a billion more, exactly a billion more a day. This comes from the Office of Management and Budget. The Social Security tax is, you know, it's a pay-as-you-go system, and employers and employees have been paying in 6.2% all the way since 1990. So when we talk about changes with Social Security to get it properly funded, everything's on the table. Increased taxes, increase in the taxable wage base, you just never know. 17% of retirees, this comes from the EBRI, Retirement Confidence Survey, 17% of those surveyed in January of 18 say their health insurance and health care expenditures in retirement are much higher than expected. If you're on Medicare Part B and you're married, each of you are paying about $130 a month, so there's $260. Then if you have a supplement, maybe it's another $80 or so a piece, another $160 on top of that. And then just your out-of-pocket for eyeglasses, hearing aids, all those things, medical devices that aren't covered can add up quick. In fact, Fidelity has come out with some research that says a married couple age 65 will spend over $250,000 out-of-pocket on medical expenses, and that does not include your insurance premiums. 5 out of 6 Americans surveyed in early May of 18 say they disapprove, big surprise, of the way Congress is handling his job. I remember when Todd Young was our congressman before he was a senator, I heard him speak and he said, David, it's gotten so bad that when I fly back and forth from D.C. and someone sitting beside me says or asks, what is it that you do? He has to tell them, I'm a lawyer. Just so it's not, it doesn't come off quite as bad. Hey, and then finally, Lemonade Day is around the corner. I used to champion this cause, but I still champion it from the outside looking in. But if you want to sign up for a 15-minute appointment at one of the following sponsored banks, they'll teach your child how the importance of spending, saving, and sharing, and your child can also take out a small loan up to $40 to help kick off their lemonade stand. So visit People's State Bank or College Mall Fifth Third Bank. People's looks like Saturday, June 2nd from 10 to 12, and the Fifth Third Bank from 2 to 4 on Tuesday, June 5th. So again, if you have a young child that would like to participate in Lemonade Day, just go on the website and Google it and check it out. You can still sign up and submit your stand location, build a stand, sell a bunch of lemonade, and spend some, save some, and share some. So it's a great program. All right, we're going to take a quick break when we come back. Last week I was in Philly at the Ed Slott IRA Advisor Group meeting. So we meet 2 times a year. And I brought my big fat manual that's like an old phone book here. And I want to share just a few thoughts and observations that I had while I was out in Philly. We'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back to Your Money with David Hayes, the Memorial Weekend edition. We're, of course, on Thursday nights, but if you miss any of the show, Saturday mornings at 9 a.m. while you're getting stuff ready for the big cookout that day. And Sunday, of course, the race. And I usually go to the race. I rarely miss the race. My brother Dan and I, our wives, and maybe a few other tag-alongs usually go. And we've set anywhere from on pit row all the way to a suite up in turn 4. We've done all kinds of fun things over the years. But this year, because of graduation commitments and things like that, it just wasn't going to work out for me to take the time on Sunday to run up there. So it sounds like it's going to be a good one. And if the weather holds off, there shouldn't be any doubt that it will be another fantastic race. I love open wheel racing, and I love the Indianapolis 500. I love sprint car racing as well. Anything like that. I mean, stock car racing is fine, but boy, I think the real men and women, right, Danica, they race open wheel. Hey, I was in Philly last week. Actually went out one day early so I could do some lake trout fishing with a couple of friends of mine and didn't have the time to do that. But I've decided that I'm going to start doing more things like that. I am 48 years old. My son's a junior in high school. And I'm just deciding that, listen, I'm going to start living my life with more of a sense of urgency. I had a chance to MC my son's Sounds of South senior banquet the other evening and shared my, I shared my view on a lot of things, but I shared my view on time and talked about how time is one of the things that you cannot get back. I mean, if you get hurt, you can get well. If you get sick, you know, you can get better. If you lose some money, you can go make some more, right? But once time is gone, it's gone forever. You'll never, ever get it. Nothing you can do will get that time back. So I talked to them about how precious time was. And right now, time seems infinite to you because you're so young. But as you get older, ask your parents, ask your grandparents, that time seems to slip by so quickly. And the older you get, the faster it goes. And I told them about Steve Martin when he was on Johnny Carson. I didn't use the name Steve Martin because none of them would have known who that is, or probably Johnny Carson. But when Steve Martin was on Johnny Carson on his 65th birthday, Johnny asked him, what's changed now that you're 65? And Steve said, well, my long-term goals are now my short-term goals, and I realized that life is like a roll of toilet paper. The closer you get to the end, the faster it goes. of course, they thought that was a little bit funny. But I said a few things and hopefully inspired those young people to think about that, at least when they're wasting time. All right, so when I was in Philly last week, we were talking, of course, a lot about the same things I talked to you here on the show about the coming potential of higher taxes down the road and how to get yourself out of the crosshairs. And we talk about, you know, the sense of urgency behind this mission as well and all the reasons why. And the Congressional Budget Office, of course, is the one that came out and said that taxes would have to double for us to simply pay for the things we've already promised. It's not me. It's not any, you know, kooky on the internet or TV. It's just the math. That's what they say. And when I tell you that 76 cents of every dollar that we bring in is going to pay for four things, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and interest on the debt, that doesn't mean that it is 76% of our budget. Because remember, we borrow about $500 billion just to make ends meet. And we do that every single year, and it's projected to continue for quite some time. So the question is, will taxes really have to double? And the answer is, I don't know. My answer to the people that have asked me this over and over, it depends on how long we can continue to borrow. How long can we continue to borrow? As long as people will buy our junk, our debt. We still are looked at in America, as Americans, as the safest place to put money. Now, the rating agencies have us rated a little lower than a few other countries, but when it hits the fan, they still run to the United States as far as backing that. And I think you have to look at debt to GDP. When you look at debt to GDP, we currently are just over 100%. Now, back in 2007, we were around 60%, so we've come a long way. But Japan has been playing this game for much longer than we have. Their debt to GDP is well over 200, not well over, but it's over 200%. So we could potentially continue to do this in perpetuity. I don't know. All I'm saying is at some point, whether it's you, whether it's your spouse, whether it's your kids, or whether it's your grandkids, if they inherit a big tax-infested retirement account, at some point they're going to have to pay. And an example that we talked about is minimum distribution requirements. Right now, when you get to age 70 and a half, you have to start taking money out of your accounts. The table that the IRS uses is called the uniform table. It assumes that you have a spouse 10 years younger, which means they allow you to stretch the distributions out for a longer period of time. They actually allow you to do it over 27 years, 27.4 to be exact. So if I'm 70, does the IRS really believe I'm going to live to 97 and a half years old? No. But because of that table, they allow you to take out smaller amounts. If they would flip that to the single table, which, by the way, inherited IRAs are already using the single life table, then they would divide your account at 70 by 17. Well, by doing that, that increases your distribution substantially, and they would not need a vote in Congress or anything like that to make that change. That is not a tax law change. That's just a way that you're required to take money out of an IRA. Just like Social Security changed their rules, they didn't go to Congress and ask for a vote. They didn't have the president to sign off on anything. They just did it. They said, no more claiming strategies like this. We're drawing a line in the sand. They could do that too. So even though taxes may not go up, your taxes would go up because of the amount of money that you're forced to take out. So for the next 7 years, and this thing, and this is what we talked about in Philly, the Budget Reconciliation Act that this passed by the skin of its teeth. Now, the question was, if there's a flip in the midterms and the current party in power is no longer in power, could the new party overturn it? Sure, but we were told by some of the pundits out of Washington it would be very, very difficult because it already has a sunset provision. We know that it will end on December 31st of 2025. Because of that, it makes it more difficult to overturn. That's what we were told. So I'm fairly confident over the next, you know, 7 years that we have a unique opportunity to move money from taxable to tax-free. And if you are putting money away currently into your 401ks, and all of you are if you're listening and working, hopefully, that you're putting it into the Roth side. I don't care how much you make. I don't care who you are. That's where it should go. Don't forget that your employer contribution, their match, goes to the traditional side. You'll have plenty of money to pay taxes on later. But I always think about this. If we're in a historically low tax rate, why would I not put the money away today at a known tax rate? The rule is, folks, that you should always pay taxes not at the latest possible time, but when the tax is the cheapest. So right now, if you're married filing a joint return and you're under 65, you can make up to about $100,000, $103,000 and still be only in the 12% bracket. So if you have room to convert some money over to a Roth in the 12, then do it. It goes 10 to 12, and then 12 to 22, and then 22 to 24, and just depending on where you fall and how much you have, that is what you should do. So this was hammered home in Philly pretty hard, that if we're not talking to and convincing people to do this, then we're not doing our job. So we're going to continue to talk about this. We're going to continue to beat the horse, even though you might think it's a dead horse. We're going to continue to do it. And we're going to motivate you, I think, to try and do the right thing or do what it is that you need to do. We've had several of these tax workshops. They've gone fantastic. We appreciate everyone that's been coming. Excuse me. We had another big one this week. I don't think we're going to have another one until sometime in late summer. But we do have another workshop coming up on Social Security and Medicare. And if you go to cfci.us under the events tab, you can keep up on everything that we have going on there. One other thing. I had a person call and inquire about selling a piece of real estate. They were asking me, should I sell the real estate? Here's how the conversation went. Well, how much is it worth? About $170,000. Do you owe any money? Yes. How much? $60,000. What's your net income on the property? Well, even after I pay my mortgage and the other expenses, I really don't make anything. Okay, so you have $110,000 sitting there dead in the water. Yes, I would sell it. And I own real estate. I get real estate. So, yes, I would sell it. So the question is that she asked me, well, should maybe I wait until I retire, maybe in 10 more years? I'm like, here's the thing. When's the best time to sell something, anything? It's when you have buyers. And this is in Bloomington, and I can tell you that anyone listening knows anything about real estate, there is no inventory in that price range. So her house might be worth more than 170 when it really hits the market. So sell things when the market's the best. That's the same thing with a farm. I had someone say, well, this is my retirement plan. I'm going to use all this money for the next 12 years, and then in the 12th year, I'm going to sell the farm. I said, that's a bad idea, because how do you know you're going to be able to sell the farm in 12 years? Oh, farms sell all the time. They do today, but how do you know what 12 years today are going to look like in 12 years? So, you know, is the best time to sell the farm in 12 years? The best time to sell the farm is when you can get the most money out of it, and you have the most buyers. So that's the way that, you know, you should look at things. And you know, I'm going to continue to talk about that from a tax perspective, and that is, when's the best time to pay off your tax bill? It's when taxes are the lowest. And back in 1943, when the top marginal rate was 92%, 93%, 94%, and the lowest marginal rate in 1970 was 20, I went through my mom's situation. I said, in 1973, she had three kids at the time, three kids. And they had a total gross income of $16,000. She worked over at RCA, and my stepdad at the time worked at Rogers Group. He was a crane operator. They had a standard deduction of like $2,000, exemptions of $1,500. So they actually ended up paying about $2,600 in income taxes, or 20%. That person today, they would have had $24,000 of free income off the top. And I know that $16,000 in 1973, that's like $38,000 today. But they would have had $24,000 first, bam, off the table. And then that next $16,000 would have been taxed at, you know, like 10% for the most part. So that would have been, you know, not much. I mean, it's just not much. And you divide that back in the total income, the effective tax rate's hardly anything. So all I'm saying is we are, without a doubt, in the most historically low tax environment that I think we'll ever, ever be in. So just know that and do the right thing. All right. That's enough preaching, right? It's not even Sunday. Let me take a quick break. When we come back, we'll have Hot Rod come on and talk a little about what's going on in the markets. The Fed is signaling a June rate rise, and he and I were sitting in his office just looking at the yield curve, and we're like, oh my gosh, the 10-year Treasury's at 3.01, the 30 years at 3.1. I mean, it's incredible. The spread between the two, the 5, the 10, the 30, and the 20, and the 30, it's just incredibly, incredibly small. So what is that telling us? And I'm going to walk you through what typically happens when you get to full employment, which we're pretty darn close if we're not already there, and how that usually leads to increasing in interest rates, and then how that usually leads to a recession. And at what point will that come? Who knows? But I want to also give you a little history lesson on recessions, because the most recent recession was the worst recession. So we think, oh my gosh, if we go into a recession, it's the end of the world. Most of them weren't that bad, and it's very healthy. So we're going to talk with Hot Rod about that. We'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. There we go, my favorite bump music, as you all very well know. All right, let's talk a little bit about what's happening. All right, jobless claims are the lowest since 1973, and Rod will be joining us here in just a few minutes. Unemployment is almost at a 17-year low. So when this happens, employers usually have to pay higher wages, then other prices in the economy go up, and then the concern about rates and things like that happen. Concerned about the economy is accelerating too fast, which then causes the Fed to raise interest rates. That chokes off growth, causing us to pull back into a recession. And it also causes investors to think, okay, do I really want to take the risk over there when I can get what I'm being paid over here? And the reason I bring that up, I remember in 1989 that I was a student out here at IU. I just came back from Greenville College, where I played football, and I lived at home, enrolled at IU, and I was starting, I think, the business school at that time. But one of the professors asked, okay, why does the stock market tend to go down when interest rates go up? And, of course, no one said anything. I raised my hand. I had been digging this stuff already for about 2 years, believe it or not. Probably doesn't shock you. And I said, there's an investor decision line. At some point, the person says, I am willing to take this fixed rate to give up all of this risk. And he's like, that's exactly right. The problem is you never know what that rate is. Like right now, rates are up and you can buy some pretty attractive fixed income. I don't think it's high enough where someone's going to bail on an equity position to go over and be satisfied with a fixed income position. But at some point that happens, and we don't really know when that is. So once again, when we get to full employment, employers usually pay more money, prices then go up, concern that the economy is going too fast, which then causes the Fed to jump in, choke off growth, and causing us to move into a recession. I think Rod's with us now. And Rod, that is the typical economic cycle. And what I wanted to discuss with you is that, yes, at some point, we're going to be into a recession. We don't know when. It could be next year. It could be 2 years. We have no idea. But the most recent recession that we've experienced, you and I have talked about this, was so terrible that most people kind of associate a recession as that recession. But in the past, not every recession has been that bad. In fact, they've sometimes been very, very minor, and they've been short-lived before we rebound. And they're very healthy, and they're needed, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, most certainly. I mean, there's a reason that one from 2008 has been labeled as the Great Recession, because it's the biggest recession that we've had. Really, the only other thing that has compared to it, of course, was the Great Depression, which went even further with that. But, yeah, as you talked about, when you really look back at the tech bubble bursting and the recession that came afterwards, now, obviously, there are many people who felt a lot of pain from the tech bubble bursting. But it was more than likely due to overexposure to technology stocks, not the recession that happened, because the recession itself was fairly mild. Granted, there was big sell-offs, but there were big sell-offs because you had outrageous valuations on companies who had no profits.
Right. And I actually printed off some of the previous recessions. And, of course, the Great Recession, we had peak unemployment hit 10%, and GDP declined from peak to trough was a negative 5, but if you go back to that 01, we had peak unemployment at 6.3, just a little more than half, but the GDP decline, Rod, was only 0.3%. And then if you go to the next one, which was in the early 90s, and I remember this one, it wasn't quite in business yet, 1990-91, it lasted 8 months. Previous to that, it was 7 years and 8 months before we had our previous recession. We had peak unemployment at 7.8, pretty rotten, but GDP peak to decline was 1.4%. So you have to go all the way back to 82. So our recessions went like 82, 91, 2000, 2007, and, you know, here we are now at 2018. So, I mean, it seems like that there's kind of a timeline here that might be matching up. So we'll see, but that's, I wanted to get that across to people that it's not 10% unemployment. It's not, you know, negative 5 GDP from peak to trough every time. I looked back right all the way into the 1800s, and you're right. I mean, that was the worst one. If, I mean, I was looking here at 1969. It lasted 11 months. Peak unemployment hit 6.5%. The one in 1973 and 75 was probably the most closest to the one that we just went through, and the fact that it was only 3 years removed from the previous one. So in 69 and 70, we had a pretty decent drop, and then just 3 years later, we had unemployment hit 9%. And, you know, that this is what I was talking about in my workshop the other day. My mom was working at RCA. She got laid off during this time, and she was picked up at GE and then got laid off again at GE. And then, you know, the cycle of unemployment. I remember as a kid going to what we called the unemployment office to get her check. It's not the employment office. It was the unemployment office. And then you go all the way to 1980 when we had a recession. You know, you and I were just little guys then, but it lasted 6 months. It had peak unemployment at 7.8. So we had some pretty nasty ones back in the day. But the lesson to be learned is every single time we recovered. And every single time when it receded, it and think a recession means it receded. It contracted. There's nothing unhealthy about that. It digested. You know, it's not the Great Depression. So I thought it would be useful, Rod, for us to talk about what generally causes a recession. Peak employment, wages go up, the Fed jumps in and chokes things off, and boom, there we go. And the Fed signaled, of course, in their meeting that a June rate hike is certainly on the table. But the market didn't, that wasn't unexpected. I mean, I think we thought this all along.
Yeah, most certainly. And I think when you look at the two worst ones of being the Great Recession of 08 and then the Great Depression, when you go all the way back to the 20s and early 30s, those were heavily involved in a financial crisis,
right,
which, as we talked about in 08, that always makes it a little bit worse because the financial industry is the backbone of capitalism and growth and the economy and businesses and everything. So when you have doubt and lack of trust with the financial institutions that are really the driving force behind the economy and growth, that really creates a much bigger issue than what many of the other recessions came from, which is just economic cycles. No different than almost anything else we experience in life. Not everything is always on a path of greatness. There's always moments of down. Even with our day-to-day lives, mm-hmm. our businesses, if you're a small business owner, how you run your business, I mean, things ebb and flow, and the economy does the same thing. So, yeah, it's not an extreme negative just because the economy takes a slowdown for a little while and potentially gets labeled a recession. Those things happen. That's the idea behind a well-balanced portfolio and one that makes sense for when you need your money and how much of it you need.
Rod, I was back in your office. We were looking at the TV and the ticker, and it went across the 10-year Treasury at 3%, the 30-year Treasury at 3.1% or 3.2, and then even backing up to like the 5-year and the 2-year. That's what concerns me a lot, is that I have been around this enough to know that if you get into an inverted yield curve, that's a strong, strong signal you're headed the other way into a recession. And then here you have the Fed kind of grappling with their decision to raise rates because they know that that they're the ones that will choke this thing off and send it back the other way, and they're trying to tiptoe around it and not just bust right through it, which I'm grateful for. I mean, when you look at what they said, okay, we want to raise rates, but now we're really struggling, basically is what they said, with what to do and how much to lift them in the coming years.
Yeah, and I think one of the big keys is, as we look at that and we discuss the flatness of the yield curve, which you're referring to there, in the past, when that has indicated an impending recession, normally the negative events that are affecting the economy are part of what pushes that inversion in the yield curve. One reason right now, Eric Geisler, our fixed income manager, while he's paying very close attention to it, he doesn't want to see it invert. But one of the reasons he's not extremely concerned about a possible inversion is because really the inversion is coming from demand. The reality is the long rates just are not moving up because there is so much demand that you have no problem people buying those long bonds at very low interest rates. So a demand-driven inversion may not lead to a recession. But, of course, we are all hoping that we don't even have that inversion and don't have to do it. But we're by no means panicked with as narrow as that yield curve is right now, but paying very close attention to what's going on, because in the past it has been a predicator to an eventual recession when we've seen that inversion happen.
Rod Holloway, everyone. He, of course, you can hear him on Mondays and Friday mornings on Glass in the Morning at 7:20. Hi, Rod. Big plans for Memorial Day weekend. I know you're a big race fan like me.
You know, yeah, I am. I'm actually going to be staying at home this year. The 100th was my last go around. I've made pretty much every one since I was like 16. And now just the cycle of getting up there, fighting through the traffic, all of those types of things. So I'm going to enjoy this one at home, spend some time in the yard, get some yard work
done. You sound like an old man, Hot Rod. You sound like an old man.
Well, hey, my youngest is graduating, so I've also got a graduation party to prepare for the following weekend. So I got plenty of things to do. I'm just going to avoid the madness of the crowds up in Indianapolis.
Well, I'm going to be home doing the same thing, graduation stuff, so I get it. When I come back from the break, you're going to have to listen to this, because we're going to be talking about what an appropriate gift to give. Like when Kinsey, your daughter, sent me the invitation, you know, how much should I give her so she doesn't think, God, he's a cheapskate, or I give her too much where she says, oh my gosh, can you believe he gave me this much, and make it uncomfortable. So I've been surveying a bunch of people over the past couple of weeks on how they look at this. So the next break, when we come back, folks, I'll give it to you, what I found out and what I'm going to be doing, because I have a stack of them at my house. Hi, Rod. I'll see you.
I was going to say, that'll be good to know, because my wife, being a school teacher, gets invited to an enormous amount of graduation parties. And that's the dilemma she has all the time, which is, gosh, I want to go, and I appreciate that these people think enough of me to invite me, but at the same time, we can't afford to pay for college and give every single person the advice to their graduation.
That's right. That's right. Well, hey, man, let's talk to you later and have a great weekend.
All right. Sounds good, Dave. Have a wonderful show.
All right, man. When we come back, here we go. The gift giving process. I've been struggling with it a little bit. It's graduation time, man. So I've been asking lots of people how they view this, and I came up with a strategy. So when I come back, I'll share it with you. This is Your Money with David Hayes. So what I found out, I'm not the only one that struggles with this. So I'm at the age and stage of life where I'm 48 years old. My son's 17. He's involved in wrestling. He's involved in the Sounds of South program. All of my friends, I have a lot of close friends whose kids are at similar ages, everywhere from a junior in college down to, you know, fourth, fifth grade. So this isn't going to stop anytime soon. And then I know there's going to be college graduations and then weddings and all that kind of stuff. So I have a nephew that just got married, and my wife went to the shower on Sunday. So it's something we all go through. And I'm looking at this thinking, okay, what is an appropriate gift? Because I don't want that kid to open it up and think, Hayes only gave me, you know, 10 bucks. Or I give him too much, and they go, Mom, can you believe that David gave me this much money? And then it's kind of an uncomfortable situation because I was the you know, grand gift giver of the party. So I started asking around. I started asking other parents like Rod. I've been asking clients when they come in, you know, what did you do? How did you do this? And I broke this down, you know, to think about it this way. First, consider the relationship to the graduate or the family member. Then determine the appropriate amount to give. There were graduates who you may not give any money to. And here's the way, and some that you give more to. So what I've looked at is this way. Okay, an acquaintance. What's an acquaintance? This is one of the kids that that I kind of know, you know, would notice out in public, maybe forget his name, but know that my son knows him. If he sends me, you know, an invitation, I probably won't go to his event, but I'll send him $25. And I think that's fine. Then you look at your friends, like your friends' kids. Now, I have really close friends. I mean, they're practically like family to me. So I'm gonna exclude my friend group because I think it's very unique. And I've been told by other people that it's very unique. Most of my friends that I run around with, I have been friends with since I was 8 years old. One of my best friends, George, and I played Little League football together on the Patriots back in Mike Hoffman. A local podiatrist was our coach. So some of these relationships go back really, really far. But typically, when you look at my son's friends and friends' kids, not super close friends, but friends' kids, that I see on a more frequent basis, and they actually talk to you and they look at you and know that you're alive, I give them $50. I think that's a fair number. And then your close friends, I give $100 to. So that's what I'm going to give Hot Rod's daughter, $100. So Kenzie, if you're listening, which I absolutely would be shocked if you are, you're going to get $100 from me. So, you know, it's not going to be a freakishly large gift, but it's going to be one that hopefully you'll appreciate. And then my family, I give $200 to. So now everyone's budget's different. And like Rod said, his wife's a school teacher and she may have 100 invitations. If that's the case, you know, maybe you write just a handwritten note to them to tell them how, you know, much they've meant to them, how much luck you wish them, and all those good wishes. So that's my philosophy. Hopefully it helps you. And what I found is most people take a very, very similar view that I have. All right, I'm going to take another break. When I come back, we'll get into the questions of the week. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone, to the Memorial Weekend edition of Yo Mo with David Hayes. Hopefully you're enjoying it. We've tried to spice it up a little bit with lots of different things. Next week, I am going to sit down and lay out my guest for the second part of the year. I've had so many I just haven't had time to get to, but I've met some fantastic people that have great insight on the economy, the markets, and different strategies that you need to know about. We're going to plug into them and start to try and get a regular stream of good guests. We started off the year great, and we had Ed Slott, Mary Beth Franklin. I mean, we had tons of fantastic guests, and I love doing it myself like this. I mean, I have a lot to talk about and a lot to say, and hopefully I'm not boring you too bad as you are driving down the road and you're not flipping over to your favorite country station quite yet, which happens to me quite often. But I want you to know that we're going to put a lot of effort into it and make this soon-to-be 17th year on air a very special one. And 17 is not a big number, right? I remember when my son said, "Hey, Dad, is 9 a real one of those really important birthdays?" And I said, No, it's not. 1 is, and then I think 5 because you go into kindergarten. Then you move all the way to 13, 16, 21, and then it just goes 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 after that. So no, 17 is not a real big important year, but what I will say, it will mark the 25th year that Comprehensive Financial has been in existence. So that's a pretty big deal, and hopefully we'll have a lot of fun things to do during our 25th anniversary. And I'll be married 25 years in October, so my wife has struggled to. Hopefully it's not been too bad of a struggle. But we've had a great run, and hopefully we have a lot more years ahead of us. All right, questions of the week. Let's see. We didn't get to all of them last week, but if I make a non-deductible IRA contribution and then just leave it alone and don't convert it to a Roth, how do I keep track of this so that I don't someday pay taxes when I take it out? Or more importantly, this person asked, so the IRS doesn't think I owe taxes when it comes out. So the answer is you file something called a Form 8606. And I actually ran across this last week, even after this question was posed. Someone had after-tax contributions that kind of got messed up, had not been keeping track of it. They kept track of it the very first week, but then never since. So, yeah, you keep track of it, and that basically gives you a basis in your IRA. But when you take money out, the pro rata rule is used. So think about this. Let's say you have $100,000 in the IRA and $90,000 of it, $90,000 is pre-tax and $10,000 is your basis. And you go in and take $10,000 out. $9,000 is taxable. $1,000 is a return of your basis, and that's how that works. All right, let's see here. I just turned 65. I have about 50% of my retirement in a stable value fund. I plan to retire in 2 years. I had a call from our new 401k provider, and they were trying to get me to move more money that I had from another plan to their plan. that almost made me feel stupid that I had so much money sitting in that stable value fund. What do you think? Well, here's the thing. Again, remember, I like to invest money that I'm going to need in a couple of years much differently than we're going to invest money that we don't need for 10 or 15 years. So is it too much? I don't know. I think the right amount is that you should have enough in that stable value fund to take care of your income for the first 8 years or so of retirement. So that, is it 50%? I don't know. I hope not, because if it's 50%, that's probably too much. And normally it takes about 30% of your money to be in the soon bucket, as we call it, that's in safe, more secure type of investments, and certainly the stable value fund would qualify for that. And then the other money could be invested in the later bucket. But you still, if your risk tolerance doesn't, you know, isn't there, then maybe having that much in stable value is just fine. All right, besides something that has a beneficiary form, what other things go directly to a person after I die that doesn't go through my will? This will be the last one. Well, in Indiana, you can set up almost anything that has a title or an account registration as a pay on death or transfer on death. Even automobiles, real estate, transfer on death, bank accounts, pay on death, CDs, all of that. So annuities, life insurance, IRAs, that all passes directly by your beneficiary form. But other assets can too, and that avoids probate. You don't have to, you know, wait, no delays. So, yeah, we do it all the time. Make sure that you know that. But also be aware that if all this stuff passes probate free, it doesn't go through your will. So if there's certain bequests in your will that you want done and you don't have enough money running through your estate, they ain't going to happen. So just be aware of that as well. All right, folks, I got to take a break. Come back in just a few minutes. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Okay, so something really crazy happened to me this week, and it was scary, and I wanted to share it with you because Glass mentioned it on his show when I was driving home. So I'm driving home kind of earlier than I normally do, and I'm in all that crazy traffic on South Walnut Street, and I'm getting ready to turn left into the IU Credit Union, and a motorcycle shoots out of the Lucky's parking lot because someone waved him on and literally runs right into my car. He flips onto my windshield. He has a son with him. His son goes flying. It's completely terrifying, scary, scary thing. I mean, those, so scary. But they were completely fine, a little scrapes and bruises, a little shake. We were all shaken up. And so anyway, we took forever for the police to come. They finally came. And then they had to block off the road, which then caused a traffic backup, which is what Glass referred to. He has no idea that was me out there, but I had the motorcycle was shattered in the road. You know, my car was all beat up, and here we were about 5:20, 5:30 on whatever Wednesday. Yeah, yesterday, Wednesday. So here I am in my suit, and this we're trying to pull this motorcycle off the road. And if you saw me out there, if you saw a guy in a suit helping pull a vintage Harley Davidson off of the road that had its entire front, you know, tire, handlebars, everything shattered off. That was me. So a lot of people did see me. I was out there. People would come by. Hey, are you? What's going on? Are you okay? I say, yeah, I'm go. And my wife, by the time I got home, she had almost 10 people that had reportedly saw me. So that either means I only know people living on the south side of town, or that I don't know what other reason it would be. So that was me. Crazy things can happen, guys. You never know how, you know, when life can change. I mean, I saw a guy busting down that turn lane prior to me getting into it, probably going 50 miles an hour trying to get to the light. Had that guy and his son pulled out in front of him, entirely different story. Would have been a complete tragedy. So in this case, few scrapes, few bruises, few insurance claims, hopefully a few lessons learned, and everyone's healthy and safe and moving on. So, hey, I hope you have a fantastic Memorial Day weekend. I hope we stay dry. I hope you stay cool. And I hope you enjoy your friends and family. And don't forget to thank a veteran and remember those that gave the ultimate sacrifice. This has been Your Money with David Hayes. Goodbye.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.